This is the Servers Radio Network. Welcome to this edition of A Server's Journey with Rocky DiStefano. The foundation of the program is everybody's leading something or someone, thus the name of the program, A Server's Journey.
Hey guys, I'm Foster, the intern.
Is that all you're going to say?
That's all I'm going to say, simple and short.
All right, Foster, the intern, thank you for that. I am Rocky DiStefano, and I want to thank everybody for coming along today again and listening to us. We believe everybody's on a journey. It's a journey of leadership. We believe every single person leads somebody or something, and we think it matters how you do it. So we are happy that you're joining us today.
Man, and we've got an exciting show for us today because we've got someone, a guest in the studio.
We do. We like guests in the studio.
Yeah, so you want to introduce?
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite people of all time, and you know, I say that a lot. I have a lot of favorite people, but Mike and I have a semi-serious bromance going. We've had one for, my gosh, 20-something years now, which is hard to believe.
22 years. Yeah.
Oh, I go back 20 years with him.
Yeah. So. And Mike is somebody who I got some great wisdom when I was much, much younger that I should look at the people that are just a little bit ahead of me in age and experience and kind of glean from them. And so Mike and I started out as friends who I tried to learn a lot from and vice versa. Hopefully we've been good for each other, but over the years our friendship has morphed into different things. I would say it's always had an element a little bit on my end of him being somebody who I see as a mentor, somebody who I look up to, who I know is trying to do it and do it right. So Mike Hodes, welcome to our show.
Thanks, Rocky.
And
we're going to hear a lot from him.
We are going to hear a lot from him. So.
Yeah. Listen, we have a website.
Yeah, I actually spoke to Eddie yesterday.
Is that right?
I did, yeah.
All right, and you got a new copy, I assume.
No new copy, but it's coming.
All right. Well, ACS Creative created our website, and we recommend that you contact ACS Creative because they don't play games with your money.
That's right. They don't play games with your money. Yeah, they might play with your money, but they don't play games with your money.
I can tell you, Ed, I was reminded about what exactly they do, and they do everything from brochures to websites to logos to direct mail campaigns. They can do everything, and even to the point of if you just need somebody to kind of help you think about where your business is and where it has to go, they're the team that can kind of help you see the future of it.
Fantastic.
So, ACS Creative.
Epic moments in leadership. This is it. This is the fun one. This is a potpourri of management.
Yeah, Larry gave us these today, and so we're going to share each one each. But these are wacky but true. And I don't know, they have nothing to do with leadership. Maybe.
Well, these guys make decisions.
Okay, good.
They're making decisions. Are they
didn't
the
make
right
decisions. Okay. So we're going to talk about the first one. This is in South Africa, and this is a bank robber. And he went into a bank to rob it. And then, as he was finishing up the robbery, he asked the teller for directions to another bank. So as you can probably guess...
What do you think he had in mind?
Yeah. Well, as you can probably guess, by the time the bank robber arrived at the second location, he was very well met by police and et cetera, et cetera. And
wow.
He was arrested. So
that's okay.
That was a decision, Larry.
So don't ask questions if you're robbing a bank.
Yeah. Fewest words possible.
Right. Okay. Foster, what do you got?
So this next one takes place in Haiti. Give you guys a little packing tip right here. So apparently these two guys pleaded guilty to firearms charges after smuggling guns into the country.
Firearms.
Charge. But what's unique is how they got them in. So they purchased a number of handguns and a number of frozen turkeys.
Yeah.
What are they going to do with the turkey?
Well, apparently they thawed the turkeys and stuffed them with the guns. Not the stuffing, but the guns. And then repacked them and tried to smuggle them into the country. And they were... sadly for them, very well caught. Yeah.
Now, I think they refroze them first because everybody knows that freezing makes metal disappear.
You can't see metal inside a frozen turkey.
Oh, is that right?
No, it's not right.
Oh, okay.
And that's why they were arrested.
I'm guessing the mindset was the turkey isn't metal, so when it goes through, it's not going to ping anything.
Yeah. Why would you put frozen turkeys in your luggage is what I want to know.
It's a little suspicious.
Very, very fair question. I was hoping it was rifles. I was thinking they would be sticking out of the turkey.
Sticking out by like a foot and a half.
No.
So anyways.
Okay, well, that's our epic moments in leadership for this week.
Right, so we're going to get right to the meat of the show because we think we could have a couple episodes here. But, you know, Mike is somebody who, as I mentioned already, have learned quite a bit from. And I'm going to have Mike just kind of share a little bit about himself, where he came from. Mike has a unique story about being a leader and a certain type of leader and then a transition into something more. So, Mike, share a little bit about yourself.
Okay, Rocky. Well, I kind of was an early snowbird. My my folks met in England in World War II. My dad was a GI, and my mother was a British young lady.
Oh, right. And one of those stories.
Yeah, they met at a swimming pool, and, you know, so they married, and obviously after the war, my mother came back to New York City, to Brooklyn, and long story short, I had an older sister, and I came along, and things didn't work out, and so my mother moved to St. Petersburg, Florida.
What year was that?
Probably 1955, 56.
So St. Petersburg looked quite a bit different than it does today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you did you move with her?
Well, I spent like a year with my dad in New Jersey, and then... anyway, long story short, I ended up spending my winters with my mother and my older sister and my summers with my dad. And so, again, I was a snowbird. And in St. Petersburg, obviously, we lived near the water. And I was blessed to be able to enjoy Tampa Bay and that whole lifestyle. And then my summers with my dad, I was able to horseback ride and water ski, that kind of stuff. So... My mother remarried and had a couple of children from her next marriage, and it was very interesting because she married a pretty prominent family. But everything you see on the outside doesn't necessarily mean it's real on the inside, and right. So my stepdad was very abusive and drank a lot. He was what I would call a kind of a weekend warrior. And the bottom line was, it was tough. It was just very interesting growing up. And it was what I saw modeled for me was, you know, kind of to use people. And that kind of, I guess, impermeated me.
Mike, how old were you when she remarried?
I was in fifth grade, yeah.
So you were
fifth
still grade. Really a young guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
And anyway, one day, this was a significant turning point in my life, which later I needed to understand what motivated me. But I came home from elementary or junior high school, and there was a policeman in our driveway. And I walked up, and I said, "What's wrong?" And he said, "Here, son, this is a list of stuff that you need to leave here." My mother came out and said, "The house has been repossessed, and we need to pack up. We're leaving." And my stepfather had pledged my train set, electric drills, to a company called HFC, Household Finance.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so that morning they dropped me off to school in a 57 Cadillac Coupe de Ville, and we left that house that night in an American Rambler that was rusted out. And two little babies, my older sister and I, we moved to a little two-room apartment in Madeira Beach.
Wow.
Right by the Flamingo Bar.
Wow.
Anyway, so, you know, I kind of, you navigate that. And so pretty much what I began to learn is you become friends with people and you ingratiate yourself to them, but not for real healthy reasons. It's more like, well, what can they do for me? Mm-hmm. And that can work pretty well.
Yeah.
But it does sort of wear you out. Anyway, I graduated from high school and went to Daytona Beach and went to junior college there. Back then, that's what they called it.
Yep.
And again, just kind of worked my way through life and didn't have any money. used to live on $7 a week. It was an interesting walk to school. And when I got out of Daytona Beach, I wanted to work in the race car world. And I actually
realized that about you.
Oh, yeah. That was my dream, to go to GMI and build race cars. So
you were an engineer? Is that what you studied?
That's what I got into. But one of my professors, who was an ex-submariner and a great guy, one day said to me, and I'd go to all his office hours to learn more about, you know, what I was trying to learn about. And one day he said to me, he said, you are working so hard. And he said, you just don't have the skill set to be an engineer. You don't have that third eye that can see behind things. But he said, you are a great sales guy. And he said, stop studying. I'm going to pass you, but I want you to change majors. And he said, I want you to get into business. And I cried because I wanted to be, you know,
engineer,
yeah, race car driver, all that stuff. So I did that. And when I got out of school,
that was amazing, yeah, that someone could see that in you and redirect you. I mean, I wish someone had seen that in me, because that's where I wanted to be, was in business, and no one ever taught me that.
Here's the crazy thing. Larry, you picked up that. I picked up, well, was he right? Or could you have been a really good engineer, and he was just reading you wrong?
He was right. To this day, I still struggle.
Yeah.
And I love being around, you know, machines and, you know, technical stuff. But I do struggle with that, you know, seeing behind. You know, when you're designing a gearbox, you've got to be able to see inside it. And I just don't have that skill set.
Yeah, see what makes it move inside and what, yeah.
Yeah. So fast forward, I went on to the University of West Florida and got an industrial technologies and education degree. And the way I worked my way through college is I would repair cars. I was a mobile mechanic. And I was pretty good at it. And so I was able to, took me 6 years to get a four-year degree, but I graduated. And some of my customers were outside technical sales guys in the electronics industry. And one of them, Roger Buck, who's actually passed away, but Roger said to me, what are you going to do when you graduate? I said, I don't know. I guess I'll teach school and fix cars. He said, why don't you do what I do? And I said, well, yeah, you're a salesman, and I'm not a salesman. He goes, sure, you're a salesman. You've been selling me brake jobs and tune-ups for years that I don't need.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay. So I got a shirt and a tie, and I went with him for a week. And I'll always remember we were at a place in Orlando, McDonnell Douglas. No, it doesn't matter. But we went out onto the line, and Roger was selling hand tools, and I started showing the ladies the ergonomic hand tool of this Arum product, and they loved it. So we ended up back at Dick Stat's office, who was the purchasing guy, and he said, yeah, we want to buy 100 of these cutters. And he said, hey, Mike, how long have you been with Marshall Industries? And I went, gee, Mr. Stat, I don't work for Marshall. I'm just a student. And he's like, are you kidding me? You know more about this than Roger. So he said, man. So long story short, we got the order. We got out there, and Roger said to me, see, I told you, you're a technical sales guy. So he told me how much he was making, and I was like, oh, my word.
Seemed like a lot.
Yeah. So I said, yeah, but I don't know anybody. He said, look, I'll get you an interview. So I graduated, interviewed with five companies, got three job offers, took the job, and lasted about 6 months, because the company I joined used to tell people they had stock, and then they didn't.
No.
Oh, no. Jeez.
And so even though I was kind of not a very nice guy, I knew lying to get an order was wrong.
Right.
And believe it or not, I built some friendships in the industry with buyers and engineers at companies like E-Systems and Honeywell. And I was able to shut down the space shuttle program because I took an order and didn't deliver the product. And so they couldn't build what they had to build at Honeywell.
Wow.
And I was called on the carpet, and my boss took me outside when we were done. He said, don't ever do this to me again. Anyway, I lined up a teaching job, and I gave them 2 months notice, and they fired me on the spot. And so here I am. Jeez. Here I am in June, and I don't start till August.
Jeez.
So anyway.
So he was upset that you told the truth, basically.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I taught school for a year, and there was a tremendous kind of interest. And they used to call me the Florida kid, believe it or not, because I was a young man in a fairly mature industry. And so anyway, I put together a business plan with some help from people from 3M Company and approached these fellows up in Ithaca, New York, a little tiny company called Deanco. Their sales were $5 million. Really nice people, upstate New Yorkers, hardworking, you know. And a lot of conversation, a lot of interviews. I had been offered a job with 3M when I was teaching school. And I accepted the job, and I told them I could start in June. And this was in February. And they said, no, you...
They wanted you, right?
Yeah. And they said, you know, nobody turns 3M down. I said, I'm not turning you down. I just can't, you know, renege on a contract. And they said, well, you know, you're a loser. You should come to work for 3M. And anyway, what I didn't know is that the folks at Deanco called the 3M people and said, hey, tell me about Mike Hodes. And they said, can you believe it? This guy had a job with us and he reneged on his contract. And they said, well, tell me more. Well, he was teaching school, and he said he could start in June, and he said he'd sign his contract, and he wouldn't renege on it. And that's just the thing they wanted to hear, because Ithaca's a long way from Florida. And they said, okay, this is our guy if he wouldn't renege on a teaching contract. So I started with them in August of 75 and began to do what I do. And again, my role modeling was, do what you have to do to get the order. But I know you don't lie. I mean,
right.
There were certain things.
You had a code. It was just, it stopped in certain places.
Yeah. And I cared a great deal about my customers, because I used to say this, a customer's right all day and all night. Find ways to make them right. And I really knew how to do customer service, but the motives weren't real pure. They were for one thing, to get an order. And I was technically very competent because Deanco trained me extremely well with products. So I became kind of a technical expert on 10 product lines and worked on XM1 tank development, Tomahawk cruise missile, you know, really nice projects that won us a lot of business. But I was just driven because I'd lost everything when I was a little boy. And I had nothing. I mean, when I taught school and when I was in college, I mean, I had no phone. No. First time I had air conditioning was in 1973.
Wow. Yeah. So that was your motivation, was what you had not had as a child.
Right, Larry. And here's the bottom line. And I discovered this later, which we'll get into. But I had a hole in my love tank. Matter of fact, people used to tell me that knew me, I had no bottom in my love tank. And I would go through people and relationships just like, you know, changing socks every day. And the way I got my self-worth was through work. And I was really blessed to be successful. And, you know, I used to say I worked half days. That's 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always remember the first year I had this job, I used to drive nights and weekends. And I drove 57,000 miles that first year, nights and weekends, so I could be in front of customers during the work day.
Wow. So you probably had trouble with anybody who wasn't as driven as you, too. You just didn't understand them.
Absolutely. I used to tell people that would say to me, you know, it's 6 o'clock. I got to go home. And I go, we're not done yet. You know, let's just get a sandwich and keep working. I said, I got a wife and kids. What a loser. You're never going to, you know. And I really meant it.
Yeah. Wow.
I made a statement once right before I kind of had this catharsis is, you know, and I hate, boy, this is hard. But I remember saying to a good friend of mine, gosh, I'm the smartest guy on this team. I just don't understand, you know, how stupid can people be? And I really meant it. It's so hard to say those words, but I believed it.
Yeah.
And I used to go through administrative assistants. Good ones would last 6 months.
Right.
They'd leave at lunch and never come back.
Right. Oh.
They'd leave their radios there. Their, wow. Oh, man.
So were they just unable to handle the drive, or was it also in addition to the drive, how you were treating them?
Well, I just looked at people as, like I said, socks, or, you know, you just use them up and get rid of them.
Right.
Bring the next ones in, you know. But I did believe in training people, and I did believe in, you know, trying to motivate them. But
did you bring them along? Did they come along?
If I could use them, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I always would do is train them. And as an outside salesperson would join our team, I would spend a month with them. And how they lasted a month, I don't know. But some of these young tigers really drank my Kool-Aid. And, I mean, I would technically train them, closed book written tests, you know, selling skills. And those are all good things. Some of the stuff I taught these people, they're using today in their business lives. And so we were chugging along. It was 1980, and I'd hired this guy, John Flynn. And John's been very successful in business. But kind of graduation day, I said to John, well, you've pretty much got what I can give you. And so let's go, you know, go hit the road making sales calls. I'd given him all the COD accounts in Central Florida, which were doing really next to nothing. Just an FYI, within a year, he had him over $1 million in sales. Wow. John's a great guy. But he said to me when we finished, heartfelt, and I'm looking at Foster, is John, you have the same look that he had right now. He said, wow, I've learned so much from you. I want to be just like you.
Mm.
And boy, when he said that, I just kind of went, oh, no, you don't. Because I am emotionally, morally bankrupt.
Yeah.
And I was, but I mean,
you were, go ahead. You were able to hide that part at work. So people just saw this shell, kind of like what you were saying about your stepfather. People could see from the outside everything looked good, but on the inside it wasn't quite what it was cut out to be.
I was a fraud, and I knew it. Yeah. And it's hard living a double life.
Did you have a family at this point? Were you married with kids now?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
I never wanted to be married. My mother had two children with my third stepdad. And long story short, I ended up pretty much raising those kids. I remember going on a date in high school and having my sisters in the back of the car because I had a babysit. So I said, I've already had my kids. And
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just worked. That was my, you know, that was my girl, my life. And people used to leave at 5 o'clock and I'd go have a quick salad and come back. And I'd work till 10 o'clock and fill her in bins, again, before computers. So they'd come in the morning at 8 and go, I have all these quotes and all these things to do.
Wow. Yeah.
They hated me.
Yeah.
And they should have, because I was a monster. I was just working them to death. But we were making money. And,
right. So now you were working with Deanco here in Florida while they were still up in Ithaca, New York?
Sure.
Okay. Yep.
And great company, you know, and they loved me because guess what? I was working all the time.
Well, and they probably weren't there day in and day out to see how it was going. They just saw the results.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, they also saw that I was really tough on people because I was tough on them. But, you know, you can't knock success. And
right.
So, again, to try to move this along, after John said that to me, I had some sales calls to make because I still covered a territory as well as managed the branch. But the deal was I was driving to Melbourne, and I'd had a long weekend to think about what John said, and I just said, you know, if this is success, and it was, I was making strong six figures in 1980.
Right.
And, you know, I had to... was dating girls in all different parts of the state. Not a nice guy.
Yeah.
And so I just said, you know, this is success. And I didn't do drugs. I never wasted my time with that. But I just said, man, there's just nothing left. And I had a sailboat. And I said, you know, I'll sail out Clearwater Pass at 270 and go out about 50 miles and go swimming. And something big will eat me. And nobody will ever know. I'm done. Because if this is success, I'm done with it. And I thought about that. And I was heading to Melbourne, going up 192. And every stoplight, you know, it takes forever. And I always had too much on my plate. I was always over schedule and stuff, and I would always run a little late, you know, just trying to pack more in. And anyway, I got to Holdapaw, and I remember I was in traffic, and I looked over to the right. I remember this like yesterday, and across this like meadow, this field. And I just started looking at it, and I pulled over, and I got out of the car, and I went, I'm done. I'm done. God, I just give you all this. I quit. And I sat on the hood of my Buick, and I remember across this meadow it said, try God. And I went, oh, God is for losers and sissies.
Now, had you been raised as a Christian?
No, no.
So God was there, but you didn't really understand anything about who he was? Or
What I was raised with is God. My dad grew up in a Jewish orphan asylum because his parents both died when he was like seven. And Dad used to say, God needs me more than I need him. And what kind of God would take my parents?
Mm.
And the only time I really heard God's name was in vain.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I always thought the only thing God wanted was my money, you know. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So you're driving to Melbourne. You're on 192.
Mm-hmm.
And you pull over and that's it?
Well, I pull over to the side of the road and I'm just sitting there because I'm just worn out. I guess it was a Monday. And as I said, across this meadow said, try God. So I sat there and I went, yeah, right. Again, try God. So I just went, okay, I'll try God. And I put my hands up into the air and I just said, okay, God, all this stuff is yours. I quit. I just quit. And I got into the car and I used to drive really fast, cut people off, big engine in the Buick. And I sat there and I said, okay, I'll try God, but wait a minute, what does that look like?
Right.
Because I had no... So I said, well, I know speeding's wrong and I know... getting involved with women is bad and wrong. So I said, okay. Well, I know lying's wrong. Okay. So I said, okay. I'm going to do it God's way for 2 weeks, and it won't work, but it won't matter.
Oh, so you gave him 2 weeks.
Yeah, I gave him 2 weeks. Okay. And then I said, okay, I'm going to go sailing, and it'll be all cool. And everybody will just, wow, he went. He fell over. Oh, gee, it's terrible. What a great guy. Yeah, nobody will know. So I drove the speed limit. And usually on 192, you hit all the red lights. Guess what? All the green lights. I was going to Harris RF to see a guy named Mike Emery. And whenever I went over there, Mike would always make me wait, which would drive me nuts because I always made an appointment because time's valuable. And I have lots of people to say, it's all about me.
Right.
And so I got to Harris. And on the way there, I said, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody about this unless they ask me three times. And so I figured nobody would ask me three times.
A fleece.
Yeah, well, I didn't know what that meant, you know. But so I got there and told a girl, hey, I'm here to see Mike Emery. She said, great, how you doing? I said, okay, you know, standard answer. And so the deal is Mike came right out. And he said, hey, you want to get some coffee? I'm like, because when you really hit the jackpot with the buyers when they take you back to the cafeteria because you get to see everybody and you know, hey, I'm accepted. And so as we're walking back there, Mike goes, you okay? You seem kind of different. I said, yeah, I'm fine. He said, okay. So we sit down and what do you want? And anyway, I got my drink and he's like, man, you really seem different. Are you okay? And I said, yeah. He said, yeah, gosh, you know, I've asked you twice. What's Ooh. Going on? So Andy Figpen came by, the manager of the plant. Hey, you're Mike. Yeah. Anyway, so he wanted some information about some cables, and I'd usually go, oh, sure, yeah, I got them. I said, well, Andy, I don't know. I'm going to have to check. He said, well, if you don't have them, you can't have this order. Mike, don't give him that order. I'm like, and I went, well, I'm not going to lie to you. And Mike's looking at me, and when Andy walked away, I said, well, you know, if I can use your phone, I'll find out. He said, wait a minute, what's going on? I was like, well, he said, I've asked you three times. What is going on? I said, well, okay. And I thought to myself, kamikaze, I'm dying anyway. So I told him. And he looked at me and he goes, wow. His wife, Gina, he said, Gina, I've been praying for you forever.
Wow.
He said, I'll never forget this. He said, you're crooked as a hind leg of a dog. But he said, I love it. And I just sat there. And so I did check, and we did have the harnesses, and he did give me the order. And then he said to me, "So what are you doing tonight?" And I had a date with him.
One of your women.
Yeah. And I said, I know that's wrong. I said, I guess I'm not doing anything. He said, hey, why don't you come over for dinner? We're having chicken. And I'm like, I'll take you all out. He said, no, we'd love to host you at our house. So I said, okay. So I went over there and had a wonderful time. His wife, Gina, was lovely, good meal. And told Mike kind of what was going on. And he's like, why don't you come to church Wednesday night? So I ended up at church, and this pastor spoke right to me, but I still was like, yeah, right. Okay, finished the week, got home Friday. I just purchased a zero lot line home. I hated it. I didn't want to live in Orlando, but I had to because our company was growing, and I needed to be in the office more. And when I got home, back then you used to wear a suit and a tie and a vest and, you know, wingtip shoes.
Wingtips are back in, Mike, too.
Oh, I'm still wearing them. My
wife. I just gave mine away.
They're new with the youth. They like them.
Oh, yeah. They don't know.
Yeah, so they don't know. We don't know.
Foster has a pair, so we know they're hip.
Well,
sorry, Mike, for
no, that's fine. Because this really it's kind of funny because even back then it was a bit of a stretch to be wearing wingtips all the time. But so I got home, and they had delivered phone books back then. They delivered phone books, you know, whatever that is. But it really angered me that they just threw them on the front porch. So I walked in the front door and I just threw them across the living room. I had no furniture. And it was a beautiful day. And I said, you know, I'm just going to go down to the dock. So I walked down to the dock, and I was sitting there on the dock Friday night. It was probably, I don't know, 6:15. And across Lake Howell comes this little voice, "Go to church." I'm like, oh, I don't want to hear this. "Go to church." It's Friday night. I'm going back to the house. So I walked in the house, opened the front door, went to pick up the phone books that I'd thrown, and the phone book had fallen open. And it was, I think, a half-page ad, Calvary, over on I-4, you know, back
off
then.
Off of Lee Road.
Yeah,
off Lee Road. The big one.
Yeah. And I went, okay, I'll go to church on Sunday. And I looked, and it said, "Singles Friday night at 7. I'm like, well, I'm not dressed. I said, oh, yeah, I'm dressed. Oh, yeah. Sure, I got my wingtips, and, you know, real nerd. So I drive to Calvary, and all these people are there. And I'm looking, and wow, God, hey, a lot of people. Hey, there's some great-looking girls. Hey, you know, this, you know, because my perception was Christians had no fun. They didn't, you know, wouldn't ever drink a beer or a glass of wine or just no fun. And so I got out of the car and kind of followed the crowd, and I'm standing in line, and there's this guy in front of me, and he's kind of looking around, and I'm looking at him, and I go, "Hey, what's happening, man?" And he looks at me and like bolts. And I went, "Oh, I got to get out of here. I'm going to count to 3 and leave." 1, 2, 3. And this really pretty girl turns around and goes, "Hi, I'm Leslie." And I went, "Hi, I'm Mike. And this is my good friend, Bobby." And I'm like, "Wow, nice to meet you." And they, "Hey, it's going to be a great rock concert tonight, huh?" I went, "Rock concert? What are you talking about?" And they're like, "Oh, no, Joe English, you know, Paul McCartney and Wings." I'm like, "Yeah, he's playing here? Is this church?" "Yeah, oh, yeah, it's a Christian rock and roll band." So now the line's right up to where they're taking tickets. I said, "Well, I don't have a ticket. I can't go." And Bobby says, "Hey, you can sit with me. I have an extra." I'm like, "Okay." And then she said to me, "You must be coming right from work. You know, is that your uniform? You know?" And I went, "Yeah." She said, "Well, dump that tie, will you?" So anyway, I was sitting there, and all of a sudden this big guy comes walking in, Jack Whiting, who is president of Repco, one of my customers. And Jack's like, "What are you doing here?" I'm like, "What are you doing here?" And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm crooked as a hind leg of a dog. I said, "Well, you know," says, "Well, are you okay?" I'm like, "No." He's going to ask me 3 times. So sure enough, he asked me that 3rd time. And I said, "Well, Jack, here's what's going on." He's like, "Oh, man, this is great. Sit with us." So at the intermission, they said, if you want to accept Jesus as your Savior, stand up. And I did. And man, it's like, ooh, it's the hardest thing, one of the hardest things I've ever done. And at the end of the evening, we ended up at the Woodshed Pub having a pizza and a pitcher of beer. And I said to Bobby, gosh, you guys are having fun. She's like, yeah.
So Mike said he used to be the worst guy to work with ever?
Yeah, of course I find it hard to believe now, but
right,
I think that's the change of becoming a Christian.
That's what amazes me. Foster, do you know Mike?
Yeah, no, I'd met him a few times. I worked with his son, and every time I've met him, he's a phenomenal guy. You'd never know. I think that's normally the case. People, you never know what their story's like before you meet them.
And that's the neat thing that we share here on A Server's Journey, is that people's lives have changed, and they become leaders.
Right. And, you know, it's funny for me, when Mike came into my life, I've only known him as a servant leader. So it's always interesting to hear the before. And it's a, you know, not everybody starts at the point they want to be, but I think you can get there with hard work. And I know that for Mike, it took a lot of hard work for him to become the man that he wanted to be.
Well, we're going to hear a little bit more about that next week.
That's right.
Right here on A Server's Journey. We want to thank everyone for linking up with us here on A Server's Journey. Remember to subscribe to the podcast, and you know, you can find us on all the major podcast providers. So Rocky, until next time, I'm your ever faithful companion, Larry.
And I am Foster the intern. Thank you so much for coming out and spending some time with us.
I think we're going to give Foster a promotion from intern. What's the next step, Larry?
Chief Financial Officer.
Yeah. Chief Financial Officer, yeah.
No, I believe it's dishwasher.
All right, well. And I'm again, I want to suggest, as always, that if you need help with your website, just like we did, that you contact ACS Creative. As always, they don't play games with your money. Let me remind you all that we know we're all on a journey, and we're on this journey together, and it's really all about how you serve in that role. And that's why every Wednesday we share this, A Server's Journey. I'm Rocky DeStefano. We want to thank you for joining, and as always, we ask you, are you someone worth following?